condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up down 25 cents. NASDAQ futures up 8. Dow futures up 30. So not much going on this morning after we ended up with a pretty nice rally yesterday after Monday's rally. We're bouncing back from last week. And interesting stuff, Kevin. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine.
Well, good, good.
What's news in Chicago?
I don't know. How many murders last night, Manny?
Last night, I don't have the numbers.
Well, we'll have to... You know, I think the guys from Hey Jackass are going to have to upgrade their game. They used to take essentially Monday through Thursday night off on the individual addresses and so forth. I think they're going to have to start doing it through the week, because we're almost nailing as many people during the week as we are on weekends now. Just saying. Our Notre Dame group was writing me yesterday saying, what in Sam Hill is going on out there? And I'm like, is it this reason, that reason, that reason? I don't know. And they said, is it a bunch of gangs running around? I said, no, nobody runs anymore. People are standing there, and somebody drives by in a car and assassinates them. Even in the 20s where I wasn't alive, I don't know that people did that much of that. I mean, maybe they did, but especially multiple people.
They did it on the Untouchables.
Yeah, a little bit. They did it on the Untouchables. But we had, in the last 12 days, we had a 8-person shooting with how many dead? I don't know. One lady just died yesterday. Made it like 5 out of the 8. And we had a 10-person shooting. I mean, if that happened in Moscow, it would be world news. Here it's another day in Chicago. It's really amazing how immune you can get to this, especially if you're in another city.
Well, it's amazing how immune you can get to it. It's amazing. There's so much to unpack in there. Citywide community, community dysfunction, the inability to for law enforcement, whether it's because they're in part because law enforcement's restrained, in part because it's an impossible job anyway. There's media coverage of it, and what gets chosen to be covered and what doesn't. There's so many pathologies at work. It's just you need at least a second hand to count them.
I think at the end of the day, there's a lot of police that don't like the police anyway and have used this as an absolute excuse to never police. I mean, they'll give you a bunch of reasons why, but I have, actually some family members that know or have been policemen, and they get this long story about, if you do this, you can't do this, and if you pull somebody over, you're liable to get sued. And I said, well, I understand all that. I maybe don't understand it as much as they do, but I also know if you're going to read me all the reasons why it's unhealthy to pick up a garbage can, you probably shouldn't get paid as a garbage person. It's just, it's a bad analogy, but it's like having a trader that refuses to get on a trade. Man, realize the Germans are on that trading floor? Well, okay, fine, but maybe this isn't your line of work. I mean, there's risk in everything you do. I think we have people that are punching the clock, and I think we have people that are and the idea that you can retire at age, whatever age these guys retire at, and get like a retirement check the next week. I mean, if you're able-bodied and 52 years old, I'm sorry, you can take another job till you're 65. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not a tough job. It's not that, you know, who knows, a person might have been wounded. God knows. I mean, but the point is, the rest of the world can't pay you till you're 100 after, can't pay you for essentially 60 years, for 20 years work. I mean, anybody who thinks we can is, you know, has got the pencil pointed at themselves. I mean, it's, I mean, what's the you know, the California prison system? I mean, they have, I think I read at one point you can retire after 20 years. All right, so you get the job when you're 24, you retire when you're, or maybe it's 25 years, you retire when you're 49, you live to 100, so you give us 25 years work out of 75. How the hell does any society pay for that? I mean, I don't care whether it's deserved or not. The fact is, the numbers don't match. And we got a lot of people, it appears, and I was listening to Paul's testimony yesterday. He, I don't know what this was. This wasn't Humphrey Hawkins, I don't think, Manny, but he was in front of Congress, in front of the House. I don't know what committee it was, because Maxine Waters was there, but she wasn't the chairman.
The House Committee on Asking Questions.
Yeah, but she wasn't the chairman, because she's the chairman of the House Banking Committee, right, or something?
Well, yeah, I think she's got banking.
Well, so I don't know who this is. This other guy, other African-American gentleman, was the chairman of this one. And the quality of the questions are absolutely obscene. Of course, there's one lady who actually, I don't know where she was from, African-American from someplace, actually was grilling him about the, she's tired of hearing about the, his CPI numbers or whatever numbers he's using when they don't match up at all to the prices that are going up in her area. And he kept dodging it. Well, you know, this and that, it's all temporary and, you know, don't worry about it. And I mean, what a bunch of crap. I mean, how do these guys, I don't know.
It's crap that also happens to lack empathy.
On his part, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, is he hung up now that the fact that Janet Yellen just had this job and in, like, the year after she got out, she made $7 million from the people she was supposed to be regulating? I mean, when are we going to get a House committee that really grills this guy? When you do a trade, do people know that the trade is coming? By the way, who do you pay? Exactly how does this work? I mean, last week, you know, I don't want to go into too much because I've probably been in there too much already, but I looked at my usual Fed balance sheet because you can't get the money supply anymore. Kevin, $102 billion. It was $112 last week. It's like a record week because they had a meeting and because the guy's putting out some BS. I mean, for guys, even Bitcoin was down 10% yesterday and rallied back on the close to be our, are we propping up Bitcoin prices now too? I mean, what are we doing? I mean, what do you do at $100 and some billion in 1 week? I mean, does anybody think, I mean, finally I had some guy in CNBC last night, I said, well, why don't the bonds show inflation or whatever? And the guy goes, well, I don't really want to be too harsh with this on national TV, but anybody who hasn't figured out that the bond market is a totally Fed manipulated market now really should think again. I mean, do we really? I mean, why? I mean, are these congressmen are they that dumb they can't answer this question? Are they asking it in private? Are they clueless? They don't care. As long as things stay up, it's okay. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, that's an incredible amount of dough. It's $22 billion a day. You're pouring into a system to prop something up, either your utterances or something. But, you know, I will say this, Kevin, there was a time when the people who were, when I got in the business, the options market was new. Well, it was 10 years old, but it was still new. They only had 100 stocks, so it was new. And there were no indexes, those kinds of things. There was no options on even, you know, 30-year bonds or anything. And, you know, the people who were in the business, maybe they were a little, cocky, shall we say. But the cockiness was different. The cockiness was that nobody was big enough to really mess with the market, like, forever. I mean, if you did it for a while, even if you were the Fed, because at the time you had central banks and governments that were trying to, remember back way back then where people, if the dollar, everybody's concerned about currency movements, right? Because people had gone off the gold standards and currencies were kind of moving around, and countries were really pissed off when their yen or whatever the hell it was went down or the dollar. So your governments I don't know if it was central banks, probably more the governments than the central banks, I can't even remember, would enter those markets to, quote, save the yen or prop up the dollar or prop up the mark or something. Because you didn't have euro dollars, you had individual marks and kronas and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, your government would enter the fray. And, of course, if you were a professional trader or knew something about trading, you knew that these guys were morons. I mean, it was essentially making a trade. So in their mind, if they thought the yen was going down and the Japanese government went in and bought up a bunch of dollars, right, okay, or bought up a bunch of whichever direction they were going, and they say the dollar's fallen, so the U.S. government goes in and buys a bunch of dollars, okay, so then at a certain price. Well, guess what? At the end of the day, if the price is lower than you bought it, you just made a really awful trade and lost a bunch of money. You didn't prop anything up, right? It's like me going in and buying 100 lot of calls for my clients at $5, and then 2 minutes later they're $4, saying, "Wait, I was trying to protect the price." No, you weren't. You just made a horse bleep trade. What's the matter with you? I mean, countries were losing, you know, at that time I would say millions and millions of dollars entering markets and losing. That's all they were doing. They were trading. They weren't protecting. And so, you know, so that mentality was there, and guys would just chortle all the time. You know, nobody's bigger than the market, and they really sort of believed it. But I don't think anybody, if you could drag those guys back either from wherever they're drooling on themselves or over the grave, if you were to show them what's going on today and say, "Wait a minute, these guys are willing to do whatever they need to do. We're talking trillions and trillions of dollars." It's not like the Bank of Japan entered the market 3 days in a row, got their butt kicked, and then said, "We better stop doing this." They just kept, now it's just, we'll do it bigger and bigger and bigger, and anybody who dares to trade with it is going to get it right stuck where the sun don't shine. Last week, if you didn't think that bonds were going to go down because whatever these guys said, it had to be some sort of an admission on inflation, which means that anybody who is willing to buy a 10-year at 1.6 is really out of his mind, or you would never do it for a client, because right now we're pushing 3% negative interest, Kevin. 3% on real rates. If you would have thought, and maybe you didn't want to be in the market, maybe you were hesitant because, you know, you weren't the only person reading the movie or reading the book or seeing the movie. I mean, you might have hesitated a little bit, but the thought that last week the bonds would actually go flying up after what the Fed said is so irrational that there had to be a reason. And as soon as I read the 100-some billion dollars put in last week, there's the reason. Now, does anybody think that that's what the Fed should be doing, is just making money to cover their vocal tracks? I mean, there's no management there that I can see. Am I just becoming engulfed with this?
Well, the other question is, okay, you did that much last week. What are you doing this week? What are you doing next week? What are you doing the week after? Because this is definitely not something that can be sustained for any period of time.
Well, okay. Now you're acting like me. And I'm going to ask you,
what kind of hit are we looking at here?
All right. Well, I'm going to ask you. I mean, now you're acting like me. Now, if I was on CNBC, they'd say, "Okay, Tom, well, what's the problem? You know, we went from 7 trillion on a balance sheet to 8 trillion since August 24th of 2020. So what is that? That's 11 months, 10 months, 10 months." We went $1 trillion on the balance sheet in 10 months. Now are we going to go $1 trillion in the next eight months? When all people are doing is telling you how the economy's coming back? I mean, $1 trillion in 8 months of essentially reopening economy, that's kind of a lot, right? I mean, it's not, we went from, $4.1 trillion to $7 trillion between, really, March of 2020 to May. So that the $3 trillion we essentially sent out to businesses and people and whoever happened to have their nose up the ass of government, it's $3 trillion we just printed and sent last year. So anybody should realize, well, that's somewhat of a problem. But it is funny. I was at my nephew had a birthday party. Well, he had a birthday, and there was a party. It wasn't like he threw a birthday party when there was no birthday. Plus, he didn't throw it anyway. And my one nephew is, you know, he's ragging big time about some firm that he worked with got money when they shouldn't. And I said, you know, I'm not about to disagree with you that a lot of people got money that, quote, didn't need it. I said, but you have to understand that the program was helicopter money. I said, do you know what helicopter money is? I have no idea. But when you hear somebody say something like that on a national scale, you've got your hand held. You know, you've got help. I'm not going to tell you to go to a dictionary. But you should find out what they're talking about. Because if you're going to have an opinion, maybe you should research it a hair, which is what uncles say to nephews, right? Especially opinionated nephews. And I said, helicopter money means they're just going to spread it out. Helicopter over state and Madison, let the money out. That's exactly what they mean. They said it. They meant it. They really didn't care who got it. So for you to have a moral umbrage at somebody you think didn't get it, look around. Look at all the checks people got. Look at the entire PPP. The 20, how many people got over, many, we did the report that one day. How many people, 20,000 firms in Illinois got over 10 grand or something? And if you went down the list, there's churches, not Catholic churches that have like schools and stuff. There's Church of What's Happening Now joints that have no employees, they got 50 grand. There's companies that were in waste management that never missed a day picking up garbage, got a couple of hundred grand. If you went down there, it makes you sick. We also have to say, wait a minute, this was 25% of the money. 75% went, they won't even tell us where it went. United, Amazon, or American, you name it. Anybody who's got a favor, anybody who could hire a lobbyist, 75% went where you don't even know. So cool your jets on one company that applied for the thing and was approved and got the dough. They read the law, they did what the law said they could do. And the intent was to just give everybody money. So relax, I mean, on that. I mean, as to whether it was a good law or not, that part, you know, we debated, you know, a lot, and maybe it wasn't. But don't, like, you know, be ready to shoot up some place because they actually took advantage of it. I mean, am I right, Kevin, or not? I mean,
yeah, I think so. And as you describe helicopter money, just to take a little oddball left turn here, there's got to be some kind of political cartoon in here where you have Powell walking into a room and going, as God is my witness, I thought dollars could, what, fly or what?
Yeah, well, but the point is, it's never really helicopter money.
Matt got the reference. Tom,
yeah.
I don't
know. Oh, yeah, I did. If pigs could fly. It's never really helicopter money, because helicopter money means you don't care who gets it. These guys obviously really cared who got it. And the people that were most connected got the most of it. I mean, you're going to find, if somebody were to do a study on this, you're going to find major restaurant chains that were not forced to, that actually were able to stay open, made out like an absolute bandit, Kevin, an absolute bandit, where they had, I'm going to say that out of all the restaurants, many of them closed. We probably lost how many thousand in Chicago, Matty? What was your last estimate? 10,000, 20,000, some huge number.
Yeah, it's a huge.
But out of the ones that remain.
Yeah, I've seen that too. It is the independently owned restaurant fatality rate from 2020 is incredible. And that void's being filled by, you know, large chains and large investment groups. And you know, we're seeing the same thing in other businesses, real estate. You know, after months of having the inability to collect rent. And, you know, and I definitely understand that there were people who couldn't pay it, and we didn't want to throw them out in the street either. But, you know, who's walking away with this? Well, institutional investors are up there buying up all kinds of apartment buildings now, because the individual apartment building owner, in many cases, can't afford to keep it.
Well, I mean,
we have reshaped the economy so much, and policy has had so much to do with it. Over the last year, I don't think there's a road back. I just think there's going to be some kind of difference here, and I don't know what it is, but I'm kind of getting to think I really don't like it.
Let me lob some history at you, which, not that you don't know it, but Maddie wasn't around, so I'm going to say that this is the third time, Kevin, in our lifetime, where a crisis. I'm starting with the Resolution Trust, and I'm going to say 2007, 2008. Were a crisis that was handled, dealt with by the government, maybe caused by and dealt with by the government. I definitely will say caused by and dealt with, although they didn't cause COVID, but they caused a lot of the inflation that was there before and some of the harm, but their attempts to fix ends up being a massive change in wealth, not just wealth, but property from one group of people to another. In a way that could have been done differently. It didn't necessarily have to happen that way. But it takes massive changes in who owns what. Resolution Trust probably being the worst, but now this could be worse. After three times and I'm not that old, after three times, I'm starting to wonder if maybe that's part of the plan. Maybe it's just part of the plan. I mean, I'm looking back at Volcker now, and the more I look back at him, I think that he could have done things a lot differently. He could have taken the heavy hand off somebody's neck a year or two earlier. He probably could have saved a third of the savings and loans. Maybe could have saved the industry. They didn't have to put the industry out. And the amount of wealth that changed from one person to the other. Take what happened in Phoenix, because we're not in Phoenix. Place like the Phoenician. He's dead, so his statute of limitations is gone. He said they put together pieces of property and they were going to sell them for 60 cents on the buck. The Bush family, Bush 1, said no, and if somebody can't take 10 pieces of property, we don't want to deal with them. So somebody ended up getting the Phoenician, I believe, for a lot less price. So somebody who owned the place, man, you know, they were out on their skis a little bit on how much they spent for it, and there was other places like that, all of a sudden becomes somebody else's place. How many people in 2007, 2008? Now, I have friends that worked in the mortgage industry and claim a lot of people got helped. Well, you know what? I wish I'd have known the guy, because I knew a lot of friends that didn't get helped. So how many people had a house where they had a mortgage, where they were paying 6.5%, could not get their new mortgage because the place didn't appraise for enough, so they were forced to essentially move out, lose their equity, which has now come back, lose their equity, and other people are in the house for a lot lower price when the person never missed a mortgage payment. I mean, the amount of wealth change, I mean, the house is still there. The quote of the market has come back, but you got a different owner. Big difference. I mean, the Phoenician came back, but the guy who owned the Phoenician, he's not there. I mean, the subtlety of that. I mean, when Trump, and I don't think he did, you know, who knows, I don't think he was that deep of a thinker, when he messed with the soybeans going to China, and all the northern farmers got basically obliterated because their soybeans were sold. They were on rail lines, not on canals and rivers. Their soybeans got sold to essentially Asia, mostly China. Well, that stopped. They had no ability to get those soybeans really down to New Orleans or any kind of Marseille or wherever the delivery points are here. So I'm going to say some reasonable percentage of those farms are now owned by somebody else, probably maybe agribusiness, maybe a bigger place, maybe some consolidation. So now soybeans are back to really good prices, and I'm guessing up there is, you know, happier than a pig in slop, right? But it's not the same guy, Kevin. It's not the same guy. And the new guys are all, you know, how many people from BlackRock are buying these? Somebody just bought some huge section of apartments here at BlackRock yesterday. It was an article in the Tribune. Okay, so somebody's still going to own that building, but now it's not going to be the person who owned it before. It's going to be BlackRock or somebody. I mean, these changes, am I the only one that remembers all this stuff? I should not remember. Well, I'm just going to play golf.
And the crazy part is that we make so many policy decisions, presumably, you know, and I say presumably because it's at least what we publicly say, is it's out there to protect the little guy. And in fact, what we do is we obliterate the little guy.
Every single time.
And so we are either too darn stupid to learn, or we're just pretty good at gaslighting the public while right in front of their very eyes we go ahead and steal from the public.
This time, if you happen to be the little guy who owned a restaurant or a bar, and you just, by a miracle case, happen to have either a good-sized parking lot, which not very many in the city do, or anything like that, where you could stay open and the neighborhood helped you out with carryouts and so forth, to where you were able to hang in there. Maybe some places did almost as well as otherwise, because lot of communities kind of came together and made sure they bought from these places. Or in the suburbs, if you had a mayor to let you put some huge tent out in the parking lot. I'm going to say that every single one of those people this year will not be as good as last year, profit-wise. Every single one. Because with the money they got from the government, and I can name you 10 places, but I sure as hell don't want to do that on the air, that I know last year was their best year ever. And I'm going to say this year they're getting some people back, and they might be enjoying it more, but they're not making the money they did last year. I mean, Maddie, am I right? I mean, this might be, what percentage would it be? 2 out of 10, maybe? 1.5 out of 10? Out of 10, probably what? 4 closed. They're not coming back. What would you say my numbers would be here, Maddie? How many, out of 10 restaurants, I'm going to say 1 or 2 are so fat and happy they and they're dying to tell a story but don't want to for fear somebody will be mad at them. But then there's probably 3 or 4 that absolutely totally.
Yeah, or somebody will say, "Hey, we missed one."
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go get them.
And I'm saying 4 or 5 are probably out, right? Am I wrong here or no?
I would have no idea, but that could be. Yeah, that sounds close to me.
Yeah, me too. We'd have to firm that up, but especially the ones in the burbs where the mayors let the guys stay open, because you could say my bar was partially was closed. Your bar's only got 4 stools. You got 100 people here. Yeah, isn't that nice? Duh, right, Kevin? But you were partially closed. What can I tell you?
You learn the game. You learn to play the game as well as the biggies.
Hey, when we come back, I was doing some studying last night. I mean, not that I was able to read the whole ruling or anything. Maybe you did, but this Supreme Court ruling on the college thing. We talked a little bit to Brendan about it yesterday, but I just kind of wonder legally. I mean, you guys know as much about law as I do, but when you make such a narrow decision, do you cause more problems than you solve, or what? You know, what's the deal? I mean, I'll kind of set this up after the break, but it seems like this particular Supreme Court decision, I don't know what to do with it. Do you? I mean,
I have some ideas, so we'll talk.
Okay, we'll talk about it. S&P futures now down 4, Nasdaq futures down 13. Let me see individual stocks. I see nothing going crazy in the Dow. The interesting part, if you're a Dow theorist, which I am not, it's funny, the transportation average is still down 7-8% from its high. So even though we've come back in NASDAQ and so forth, you wonder in the nature of this rally whether it's, you know, some of the industries that Dow theorists used to look at are kind of sinking the other way. But boy, if you're involved in the plugs of the world and those places have been getting clobbered, they had a huge day yesterday. So if you're in any of those kind of stocks, you're happy as a clam. Anyway, we'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Weber on the board. S&P futures down 175, NASDAQ futures down 250. We're flashing around here pretty kind of violently in a very normal, short range. They were just down five, now they're down 1.5. So whatever, it's not much trading going on there. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 97.6%, FTSE up 21.3%, CAC around down 40.6. So, kind of not going the same direction over there, which is a little odd. Asia, where they never seem to go the same direction. A Nikkei down 9, call that flat. Shanghai up 8, that's 0.2%. Hang Seng, which has been down, is up 507 today, 1.8. So every sort of getting back to where they were. If you take the average of the last 5 days, they're all kind of in the same spot, which is really bizarre. Yesterday, Dow was up 68. S&P was up 21, however. NASDAQ was up 111 to close at a record. Bonds, 1.46, which is actually down a little bit from yesterday. It's a 10-year yield. It doesn't say down, but it was down from when we talked about it on the show. Bund minus 0.18, Japan positive 0.05, so no change there. Oil up 56 cents, 73.41. Oil continues to creep up. Brent 59, up 59 cents, 75.40, so went through 70 not that long ago, now it's going through 75. Natural gas up 3 cents, 3.28, again, traditionally pretty darn high for June. RBOB is up a penny to 2.24. So any thought you have of getting gasoline at the pump for less than $2 anytime soon, forget that one. Gold up 450, 1781, so it's kind of creeping off the bottom here, kind of a dead cat bounce, but doesn't look like it's heading back to 1900 anytime soon, let alone 2000. Silver up 9 cents, 25.95. Copper up 2 cents, 4.25. Crypto, we've got the Bitcoin trading 33,988. Yesterday, I think they were under 30,000 for sure. So now are we saving those two? We're not exactly sure. Kevin or Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Looks like we're off to a pretty good start here on a Wednesday morning as far as the expressways are concerned. Edens and Kennedy all quiet. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson until you start to approach the loop. Then you'll run into a bit of a slowdown. Southside expressways are looking good too. Only issue in the area is on the tri-state. Northbound, right near the Stevenson, there's a crash blocking the left lane, and that has the tri-state backed up to Harlem from that Stevenson exit. So it's a multi-car accident involving a FedEx semi, it says here, so expect significant delays on the northbound tri-state right around the Stevenson backed up to Harlem. But that's the only crash in the area right now. Weather today, lots of clouds today, mild temperatures, a high of 77. Could have a threat of a shower or two. Right now it's overcast and 66 degrees downtown, but still dry. For our Phoenix listeners, they're expecting rain down there as well. Rainy today with a high of 99. Right now it is mostly clear and 89 degrees in the Valley of the Sun. In sports, the Cubs beat the Indians, splitting their two-game series, winning 7-1 last night. Kyle Hendricks earned his 10th win of the season. White Sox were down 2-0, rallied back with a three-run sixth inning on a Yasmani Grandal three-run homer to take a 3-2 lead, only to give up four the very following half inning, and they end up losing to the Pirates 6-3 last night in Pittsburgh. Diamondbacks were shut out by the Brewers 5-0. NBA draft lottery last night. The Bulls, if they could have drawn into the top four, they would have kept their protected first-round pick. But instead, they drew the eighth spot, so they have to give that pick to the Magic as part of the Vucevic trade that they made during the season this past year. So the Bulls have a second-round pick only so far in 2021. That's 38th overall. Pistons earned the number one overall pick, so our friends up in Detroit are happy about that. Suns will draft number 29 in the first round. Speaking of the Suns, they have more important fish to fry right now. They are now up 2-0 in the Western Conference Finals as they topped the Clippers 104-103. No Chris Paul, no Kawhi Leonard. It was a lot of backups and bench players playing last night. But the Suns now lead that best of seven series 2-0. Jafe.
Is this going to be known as the injury playoffs?
It's been a lot of injuries to a lot of star players, and of course the players believe it's because they started so soon after the bubble. And they thought they should have had more time off. But be that as it may, they're still playing.
So if you come down on somebody's
foot... Did you guys see how the game ended last night?
I did not watch the game, no. Past my bedtime.
Yeah. Less than a second left, and Phoenix had the ball. First of all, they missed a pretty good three. They earned themselves a good three to try and win on a last-second shot. But the ball was knocked out of bounds by the Clippers. They reviewed it and so on. Well, they had to inbound on the baseline under their basket, maybe halfway between the basket and the corner. And so, you know, tough passing angle. And Crowder inbounded the ball, put it right over the top of the basket, and Ayton threw it down.
Oh, nice.
Wow. That's
now I need to pull that up.
So, you know, less than a second. That's still left enough time for the Clippers to be able to inbound the ball with, you know, like a really amazingly fast catch and shoot, but they also had to go the length of the floor to do it because they didn't have any more timeouts.
And, well, some of these games have been really something coming down to the end. You can't, much as you can say the NBA doesn't play any defense, a couple of games I've watched in the playoffs, there's a lot of defense. Guys flying all over the place. I don't know how good the defense is, but it's physical. Let's put it that way. You still can't really hand-check people and stuff like you could in Scottie Pippen's era, so you can't really touch them until you blast them.
But in the playoffs, they let them play.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is physical, and that's why the games are much more low-scoring in the playoffs.
Could we get any dumber announcers? And one of the games where I was watching it, it was a kid from Notre Dame, and he's playing for Nets, right?
No, you're talking about Connaughton playing for the Bucks.
The Bucks. Well, in one game, he goes up and this guy comes across with a hand and just whacks him right in the eye, and he's sitting there bleeding on the floor. So they play the thing over and over again, and it wasn't called, right? Then they showed one of the other end that there was some kind of thing that wasn't called. And then they get some absolute buffoon color guy, and he's like, "Oh, you know, that's the way like basketball is. You got to let these guys play." I'm like, "What are you talking about? Those are two of the worst no calls I've ever seen. One guy almost got his eye taken out, and you're acting like you're." You're the tough Monday morning quarterback while you're sitting in the booth safe. Oh yeah, that's like, you know, this is a basketball. These guys come to play, and you know, here's a guy bleeding on the floor out of his eye. Okay, you're not supposed to call those. What exactly are you supposed to call? Just saying. anyway, so that game's been pretty good though, man. What about the hockey? I mean, I've totally tuned out to that because I've been watching either baseball or basketball.
Well, I know Vegas and Montreal are in the Western Conference Finals, and then the Islanders are in the Eastern Conference Finals, but I'm not sure who they're playing. I'll have to pull it up.
They might be playing Tampa.
That's exactly who they're playing. Yep, good call.
Well, now, what is the story with Canada? Are the Montreal and Denver flying back and forth like normal, or did Montreal just come here and stay the whole seven, or what's the deal
with
that?
I think they're flying back and forth between Montreal and Las Vegas.
So they made an exception for...
I think they said once they get to the conference finals, then they'll, I guess, get back to normal.
Well, changing subject.
Once they get to the conference finals, it's okay to bring disease back into the country.
Yes, because after all, hockey's important.
Not that that's what they would have done in the first place, but because it was a stupid policy. But But you know, look, what's the difference? If there's health concerns, there's health concerns, aren't there?
Yeah.
Well, I think you have to draw a line somewhere, though.
The inconsistencies across the board for all of this.
Well, they just pushed it another month, Kevin. I think Canada pushed it another month before you could go up there.
Yeah.
But does that mean Toronto is in Buffalo another month? It must. The baseball team.
They were expected to go back in July.
They just pushed it off till like July 25th or something the other night. I saw it. So they pushed the whole thing off. Because one of the girls I know from one of the places I go once in a while has a online boyfriend from Toronto, and she still hasn't been able to meet the guy. And they've been kind of online dating, whatever all that means, for like 6 months. Now it's another month. I got the whole story. Anyway, she still can't go see the guy. So, of course, all the pictures the guy sent her, the pool at the table is the guy's under 5'5". In reality. Which is so mean I can't even go there. But
what I'm reading here is that the Blue Jays are currently committed to playing in Buffalo through July 4th, which closes a 10-game homestand. Then they go on the road, and then they're scheduled to return to Toronto for their next home game, which is July 16th.
I think they're not open until like July 21st or something. So interesting what happens there.
So that would be 3 weeks away. July 16th would be.
So, well, yeah. So, Kevin, both of you guys, correct me if I'm wrong on this thing with NCAAs. I mean, we've talked about this forever, and with the idea that you're essentially running a professional nonprofit sort of thing where your coaches are making $11 million, you're not supposed to pay the kids other than it started out as tuition, and then all of a sudden a tuition, room and board, and then it started out as you can give somewhat of a stipend, which is not just supposed to be just that, a stipend, and of course you had to watch out for all kinds of things with the boosters giving money, and you had bizarre stuff that Kevin's reported on at the time where if the hockey team is there over the basketball team over the holidays, and you run a thing for people to go watch, say the basketball team somewhere else, and there's food involved, you can't even bring those guys there if it's a $10 dinner because the $10 is limited. It gets to bizarre places, but clearly one of the things that when you start having let's put it this way, when you start having your city underwater and you got a dike keeping the water from the city, there's all kinds of leaks that form and you got to keep poking your finger in a dike, right? So you always have a situation where, okay, what if the guy gets a job at the summer from some booster who happens to be a lawyer and the kid's supposed to be a clerk? And oh, by the way, he shows up 2 days and makes 30 grand for the summer. Now, clearly, that's not real wages and it's a payoff to go play quarterback at God knows where, your favorite university. So the NCAA has come up with all kinds of rules. Some of them were totally overboard to where you can't sell your likeness anywhere, which really were nuts because they wanted to own it. So in the middle of this mess, there's some stuff they wanted to keep for themselves and other stuff which just, I don't think that we could hire at PTI a Notre Dame student for a summer intern because we're considered boosters because we're alumni. And even though, I've never given up anybody who plays for Notre Dame a nickel and never will. And if the guy actually or a lady ever shows up and actually wanted to learn the business and worked here for the summer, I don't see why I should be not allowed to do that. But they would say no. All right, so it starts to get so intertwined, what a tangled web we weave, I guess, is the statement. It's not a Supreme Court.
Well, yeah, when you have a bad foundation, a bad premise behind your business model, then you keep trying to, like you said, it's like the cartoon character plugging his finger in the dike only to have it sprout a leak somewhere else. That as you go through that process, it becomes so convoluted that it becomes unmanageable. And again, it never gets any better. It's the old joke of some of the worst offenders supporting some of the rules tightening because they never intended to follow them anyway. So it's only a burden for the suckers that want to follow them.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I can see that in the trading floor. The big firms always wanted the rules enforced, except for them. But anyway, so now all of a sudden the Supreme Court comes out, and kick me if I'm wrong here, and they say that the schools can't regulate how much the players, male or female, make like in outside activities, read summer job. So you can have rules.
I think in this specific case, they're going where you said, but in this specific case, they really only ruled about limits on educational-related benefits.
Okay.
So, for instance, if the school wants to give you a laptop, can they enforce what kind of laptop and how much you can do, and so on, and you need that for your academic success. But in some majors, maybe you need a gaming laptop, and if you're in the big into gaming, you know that those kinds of laptops have so much juice and so much power, and all the cool attachments and so on that can be worth a whole lot of money. So, but what they're really, in doing such a narrow ruling, because the case was very narrow, I think they're well on the way to telling the NCAA that the next one's not, you're not going to win the next one that comes down the pike either.
Well, but what I'm saying is. By the way, do you think I need a gaming laptop?
Tom, I don't think you could handle a gaming laptop.
I don't think I could handle a regular laptop. Anyway, so the let me get this.
That's why I don't think you can handle a gaming laptop.
Well, the couple articles I read seemed to indicate that it also extended to you can't regulate how much somebody can make in a job that wasn't part of the education. So in other words, if any of these guys actually did have a summer, which they don't anymore, it could work somewhere, like at PTI, you couldn't regulate how much they made. A couple of articles said that.
Again, I think this was all education-related, but that could be an internship, and a paid internship.
If you're the Supreme Court, even those people, who I don't think know much about college sports, although a couple of them probably do, I think the new guy does. What's his name? The guy had the rough time getting in? So who was the last guy, the last Trump guy?
Oh, Kavanaugh?
Yeah, I think he knows something about college sports, but I guess he wrote interesting paper about it. Well, not a paper, it wasn't a dissent because they all agreed, but what do you call it when you write something but it's agreeing with the other guys, just another piece of paper? It's not a dissent, whatever, he's got me a name for it. Anyway, so let me get this straight now. If what I'm saying is true, that you can't relate the educational, interns and those kinds of things, how does that not mean that a booster can pay four people from the ladies' fencing team and the volleyball team and three guys from the football team $50,000 a summer for 2 weeks' work? That gets you around every other rule at the place. So how do you not have the ability to do that if you're going to keep the other ridiculous system in place? I mean, it's clearly part of the deal, right? Because there's a million boosters that would be happy to do that at Alabama for the next best quarterback, right?
I think I'll go back to what I said at the very beginning. If you have a really bad business model, in the end, there's nothing you can do to make it work.
Okay, well, let me ask you, and I'll ask Maddie too. If you go through, and I actually have a site that gives you every tuition at every place. Let's say, for instance, somebody actually did care about their education when they go to play football or basketball, and I'm thinking a lot of guys probably do, and a lot of ladies probably do when they play in the volleyball or whatever. There is a difference. In theory, Notre Dame or Northwestern are giving somebody $70,000, and Alabama's giving somebody $35,000. So out of the gate, the tuition, room, and board is not even, right? I mean, to most students, it's the same thing. I mean, you're going to class and you got a place to live and they're giving you three a day, right? Meals. But in reality, I mean, you could also make the argument that Alabama should be able to pony up, that it should be a dollar number. That
they should be able to equalize the value of tuition, the tuition, room, and board differential.
But I'm not agreeing with that. I'm just saying you can make that argument easy enough. So it's never been easy from the get-go, right? Or the idea that Harvard or Stanford can give a academic ride to somebody that clearly is not the smartest person in the school as long as he plays football or baseball, which to me is totally absurd because I happen to know a kid who went to Harvard or went to Stanford on an academic ride and played baseball, and the valedictorian and the number two person in the class got flushed from Stanford. So anybody who thinks that's right, I mean, I guess I got a problem. I mean, that to me is lunacy as well. So the whole system is screwed up. And but by taking little shots at it like the Supreme Court's doing, do they think they're helping or hurting? What are they doing here?
Well, I think what they're telling the NCAA, well, first of all, they can only rule on the case that's brought.
Right.
So, you know, they're not, they can't go out and just, you know, say, oh, by the way, we're gonna write some new laws here and you're gonna have to implement them. That, you know, that's, it's not what they're supposed to do, and that's not what they're going to do. So once we get past that, then, what's really gonna happen here? They're essentially telling the NCAA, you lost unanimously here. And you're gonna lose again the next one that comes along, so you better get your house in order. You better get out in front of this. But again, that's something you and I have talked about for, 10 years now?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy because the NCAA has had ample chance to get out in front of this situation and deal with it, and it just never happened.
Well, I mean, I could, this would be super unpopular, but I could actually, be it high school or college, be it minority, be it need, be it whatever, I don't think that schools should give scholarships. I mean, I could absolutely, in my mind anyway, I might get a C paper from somebody who knows more than me, or I get flagged, the F. But I don't see any reason, if Notre Dame has a price, say $50,000 a year for education, you don't get to walk into the Costco and get a price better than the next person. The price is the price. Costco's job is to sell hamburger. If somebody's going to doesn't have enough money or something, and needs a help buying the hamburger, that's I'm going to say it's the state or a charity or somebody else's job. It's not Costco's. So I don't really want Notre Dame giving somebody an academic ride to play baseball.
Well, yes and no. Here's where I think your analogy breaks down, though, is that Costco and every other store routinely has sales to get people to,
I understand it,
to come to their store.
I understand
and
it. Well,
in fact, in the retailing world, when you're looking at grocery stores or almost any other retail business, something is on sale every week.
I don't disagree with that.
It's just a matter of what's on sale. But the whole idea there is to keep being able to say, I have X on sale, I have Y on sale, here's what you have to do to get it. Come on into my store, and knowing that you'll spend money on other stuff too.
Well,
how they price is built to attract who they want to come into their store.
I get that, but at any given moment, it's even for everybody. I have a real problem with the 15 different rates for an appendectomy at a hospital, where if you're paying yourself, it's triple than if it's an insurance company. I mean, that is absolutely against the Clayton Law. Okay, and the Clayton Act, in my mind, in the way I read it. So when you go to Notre Dame and say, how much is the tuition? Oh, your parents got dough? $70,000. Not so much dough? $50,000. Oh, by the way, you can play football? Make that free. What about, you're a minority? Make that $20,000. I don't have any problem with minorities getting into Notre Dame. I don't think it's Notre Dame's job to be the benefactor here. They're a school. They should just say, this is what I need to run the place. And I don't have a problem with Kevin Chief and Maddie Weber's benefactors, where we're going to go out and find kids in the ghetto or whatever in the bad neighborhoods, and we're going to come up with, because Notre Dame Club of Chicago does that. We're going to find kids from Englewood or someplace that we think deserve to go to Notre Dame, and we're going to come up with the dough. I'm just saying it should be separate
for a third party angel.
Yeah,
and that's fine.
I think the universities. I mean, what purpose does it have to have a list price of $70,000, where virtually everybody that you feel like are there at $35,000, and oh, by the way, somebody can pay it, you stick for more. I mean, how would you feel if you walked into Costco and the guy, how much is the hamburger? I don't know, how much you got? Basically, it's what they're asking you, right?
Yeah.
I just, I mean, the whole, we, I mean, we could recreate a lot of this stuff if we used a little common sense. And what, you know, and we sort of don't. I mean,
I'm sorry, that's not allowed.
No, that's not allowed. So, anyway, but, so do you think, what do you think happens with the schools on this thing? Nothing? I mean, probably, I don't see much change into you.
From what I've seen out of the NCAA all along, I don't think that, that there will be a substantial change until they're forced by the courts to do it.
Okay.
So I think they'll change what they are forced to change, but they're clinging desperately to a business model that essentially it says, and just to describe it, is they're saying football and basketball, maybe in a few places, baseball is self-supporting or women's basketball is self-supporting, but most places it isn't. But what they're really saying to you is that I can support this whole athletics administration, all the scholarships behind it, so that I don't have to pay a market rate to football and basketball players, and it's worth it because if you look at a total cost, the total salaries of the athletes, including all the lacrosse team and the rowing team and the tennis team, and you pull them all together and compare it, say, to an NFL salary cap, it's still cheaper for them. It's a business model that really works well because the labor is cheap.
Well, and you're...
And so they dress it all up as an extracurricular activity that just happens to have 85,000 people show up to watch every week and pay $100
a pop. The Irish charge somebody $70,000 to go there or more, including room and board. Now, your football players might eat more than everybody else. What do you think the marginal cost is of an extra student? I'm going to say 15 tops.
Basically, it's the food they eat and it's the consumables. That's it. Yeah. It's only the consumables.
There's one more person in class if they show up. if they show up. What's the difference? Hey, real quick, we have Russell coming up, but while I have you here, what are we on these playoffs, Matty? Hockey and basketball, are we a month late? Did they both start later?
Yes. We're definitely, so typically the NBA finals would be going on in what, mid-June or so? Early June?
Yeah, they'd be wrapping up, right?
I think they'd be wrapping up.
If they weren't.
And we're two games into the Western Conference finals, and the Eastern Conference finals start tonight in basketball.
Well, are you?
So I would say they're a full at least 2 to 3 weeks behind.
So a short turnaround from last year is a problem. Guess what? There's going to be another short turnaround.
That's right.
Well, I just as a sports bluffs, which I know you guys are, because I am too, not to the same extent maybe, I'm having real trouble following all of them because I'm watching the Cubs and the Sox, and when they're not on, I'm catching a basketball game because there's been some pretty good basketball. I've totally toned hockey out, and I actually like hockey. There just isn't enough time. I mean,
there is enough bandwidth to have it all, and hockey has suffered for me too.
Hockey suffers for me when the Blackhawks aren't good. I really enjoy the sport when I watch it, but like you said, you only have so much bandwidth, and if the Blackhawks aren't involved, I just don't follow the other teams close enough. Whereas the other sports, I know enough to be dangerous, even if the Bulls aren't good, I can still watch an NBA game, and I know some of the players, and so on and so forth. Hockey, I just don't know the other teams at all.
That's true. Well, was it wrong of me to really want the Bucks to win because I didn't like New Jersey because they all went together the same team. They're all their own general managers.
No, I think a lot of people were in that boat.
A lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, I felt that way too. But I also know that if the two other Nets guys weren't hurt, they would have won that series easily.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that.
It became very apparent.
Oh, yeah. And you can't help but marvel when you watch Kevin Durant play like he did in Game 7.
Oh, he's unreal.
He's incredible.
Unreal.
At 7 feet tall to do that, it's never been done before.
Yeah, he's pretty special. SP Futures up a quarter and NASDAQ Futures up 9. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 208-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howell. He's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures, well, they were unchanged. Now they're down 50 cents, so they're pretty much unchanged. NASDAQ futures up 3. Again, it's been an incredibly, I mean, if you're a professional in the business and you're watching who's involved in the market and what they've been flowing back and forth, and we had Mike Hart on yesterday talking a lot about the VIX and the and how it's flying, you know, with the, every time a move out of Washington or another central bank, that the VIX being kind of inordinately high for basically a calm time or pretty calm, is, you know, is indicative that people think the market's going to keep moving all over the place. Russell, how are you?
I'm good. It's summertime.
It is. By the way, if you were going to be a, if you're a golfer, which, I used to be, Mr. Weber is.
Golfer.
I can't think of a better day, especially if you're going to walk or carry your clubs or something, than 77 degrees and cloudy. Could there be a better day to play golf?
It's pretty good.
I cannot. The one time I'll get out this summer, I hope it's this nice.
Yeah, I mean, you really don't want the sun beating down on you, especially in June. But I mean, today is, if you're going to be Ernie Banks, you can say let's play 36. Today would be the day.
I agree. In fact, yep. I may try to get out today, although I don't think it can happen.
We'll shoot 9 at twilight somewhere, Manny. You can do that.
Yeah. It's just, you're right, when it's cloudy especially, I mean, even when we played on Friday when it was like 95 degrees out, which is not ideal, but after the fifth or sixth hole, the sun went behind the clouds for about five or six holes. I mean, it felt like a 20 degree difference, even though it was very hot out. If you get a cloudy day, it's beautiful.
I played a couple days, I mean, I used to play all the time, and but a couple days where it actually was a very light rain, no wind, just enough to get all the other, mofos off the course, and I think I walked around in 3 hours, and it's one of my best rounds. Just get everybody the hell out of there. And I was actually...
Even with your hands wet?
It wasn't raining that much. I think it was a very light drizzle and just not enough to wet.
Once my hands get wet, I'm done. I stink after that.
Well, you know, you're a wealthy man now with all these different, you know, jobs you have, and now you're a big executive. You could really buy more than one glove.
True, but I mean, how many gloves do you? If it's raining, how many gloves do you? Do you need six?
Define raining. I'm talking about. I said a light drizzle. I didn't say a downpour.
It doesn't take much to get your hands wet, and then your towel's wet, and then you're screwed.
Well, get yourself a caddy.
Matt, you remind me of my oldest dog, who we basically have to go out with an umbrella when it's just drizzling to do the business. Do you need somebody following you around with an umbrella?
That would be ideal. Golf, for whatever reason, if my hands get wet at all, I can never seem to get them dry, and then it doesn't take long, and all of a sudden I can't hit the ball.
I don't know why.
That sounds completely mental, and I've got a buddy you can talk to about that. We'll talk offline.
I think you need a more composite, a rougher grip, you know, which might mean you got to get the hands in a little better shape.
Yeah,
same.
That could be.
Anyway, Russell, I have to admit, listening to my co-hosts, which you of course are one, I learned an amazing amount, obviously we have a lot of. I'm going to be nice and say we have a lot of eccentric sort of listeners that find
stuff. We're like the hosts of Misfit Island.
Yeah, we're sort of like that. But the amount of facts that come flying around. I mean, one of my themes, just because it seems like it's going this way, and I don't know, I notice it if other people don't, but you I think do, is that a lot of what we see in business. Is supposed to be based, and if you ask anybody, what the role of management in a company is, and you're going to get the University of Chicago, it's to maximize wealth to the shareholders, without breaking rules, basically, right?
And do no harm, exactly.
And
I was writing an article about this today.
Well, yeah. the guy you should have a couple of cups of coffee with, or whatever beverages. Eric May, he has been out for a while because, he took the COVID very seriously, let's put it that way. Plus, Columbia was closed down, and anyway, it was a big deal for him, having to teach everybody from home.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was for you too. And he has this theory, and he brought it up one day about, we've morphed way past that, that we're into this management class that none of the laws, none of the people even really know how to deal with. It's almost like a Russian bureaucracy thing where nobody really cares about the shareholders other than you have to talk to them every 30 days or 90 days. And, you get the media still jumps on you. But by and large, these guys are in a group off by themselves. I mean, was it the Pandera guy paid himself $1.1 billion last year in the midst of the COVID? And the board let him have it and voted for him. And, to the point where anybody who thinks that quote shareholders are other than a noisy nuisance. I mean, I think you better find another rock to bang your head on. But does the Commonwealth Edison really care about the shareholders right now? I mean, to the point where would a board member walk in and say, "I've looked at all the competitive salaries, and it looks to me like we should drop." Everybody's salary in the top 50 people here by 25% and increase the dividend by 2 cents. I mean, literally, that would go over like a fart in church. I mean, in that mm-hmm. boardroom. And to the point where, but it extends other places. I mean, we have people talk about, for-profit universities and what a dirty idea that is. And we still, every once in a while, come down on one of those guys big time. Without anybody mm-hmm. asking, really, does any university, does Loyola or Notre Dame guarantee anybody anything? The answer is no. I mean,
No.
And it comes down to charities. I mean, there's charities that give, like, this food depository. I think when Robin went to get on the board there years ago, and I think they've only gotten better instead of worse, those guys are like 95%. I mean, I'm talking out of school. It's a long time ago. 95% of the money goes to the end user. And there's some charities where 40% goes to the end user, and the rest of it's sucked up by the overhead, right? So our friend Paul writes in, and here's a total example of what I'm saying here. And I don't have a fix, Russell, but I'm just noticing the trend. The Green Bay Packers, and I always say once in a while that they're actually a charity, essentially owns them, for lack of a better term. And it started out as the Knights of Columbus, right? And then it became, in 1986, it became Green Bay Packer Charities. Essentially, it's a foundation that owns the club. So if you buy a share of stock, you're literally getting a piece of paper. You have no profit share, and you don't even get to the head of the ticket line. You just have a piece of paper that you can hang in your house saying, "I'm a shareholder in the Green Bay Packers." With the past, 1986, in the past 34 years, they've averaged less than $500,000 a year they've given to this charity. And in 2019, the revenue of the club was $485 million. So tell me that this is all for charity. It's for the people who are in there sucking the dough. It's not, probably not for the players. It's the overhead is unbelievable, right?
I mean, I'm sure. I wonder if there's somewhere you can find out what all the salaries are for the front office and et cetera.
Well, it's not,
compare them to
how much
the McCaskey people pay people.
Well, it's not a public company, but the Bears surely aren't. And you wonder.
If they've got shares, I wonder if there is a way to find out if they, what they're paying people.
I'm going to say no. But I don't know.
Back to the CEO thing. That might be a function of there's two ways or two big groups that could get you thrown out as a CEO. And the shareholders are one, but in the world we're in today, the public's the other. You know, if I'm a CEO of a company and I get on an American flight and I had a couple too many cocktails and I took the wrong pill and I go on some sort of weird racist rant or do something stupid like that, you know, I could lose my job probably more quickly that way than pissing off my shareholders.
Well, yeah,
and that's an extreme example, but as a CEO, if you're running a company and you're not being 100% politically correct and you upset the wrong group, you could lose your job as well.
Right, but it has nothing to do
so that,
with
that
how much
might
you're...
Be, that it might be a shift in that sort of focus of being more, not necessarily totally self-absorbed, but being more concerned about the public at large as opposed to the people that you're supposed to be directly serving.
Well, there's no doubt that we've gone to this court of public opinion that you could pay yourself three times what you're worth because you put the board in. And you're good to go. But God help you if you're caught, you know, grabbing an intern on the behind the company Christmas party, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, or
I mean, which would also upset the board. But if you're you know the best CEO in the world and your stock's going to the moon and your shareholders love you, you might get a little bit more leeway on misbehavior. But back in the day, but not now.
If it gets out,
you can't.
If it gets out, it's a problem. Yeah. If it stays in house and they're the only ones with the picture, it's not a problem. If you're making a lot of money, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's
right. So, I wonder if it's not as much a function as managers being of us having an agency issue with them being completely worried about themselves as it is they're worried about the court of public opinion more than they used to be.
Well, let's just say, without going into names, because it was a long time ago, there was a group that ran the CBOE, and actually I thought were very competent, and I really liked all the guys, and I was on the board, and so they sort of did it to themselves, and this one board member, I'll give you a little bit of a story, a friend of mine forever, but that's another story. I don't want to give any hint of who it might have been, but the chairman went out and hired one of these executive, what do they call them, compensation management firms?
A compensation consultant.
Yeah, so I'm going to say that if you were a compensation consultant in one time you did the study and came in and your conclusion was the guy was paid too much, you would never have another job in the industry again. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, gosh, no.
So, of course, he wanders in and gives this huge presentation, very professional, because, of course, you know, he had the one guy helping him, and he had the very attractive, well-dressed lady helping him. So he had the whole deal down. I mean, there's no doubt. So, and everybody's dressed to the nines, and wouldn't be a suit you got at Joseph A. Banks, that kind of thing. So he gives this deal, and he takes the heads of the CBOE, the president and CEO, and a couple other people, and says, well, their competition is the head of the Chicago Board of Trade, the CME, and the New York Stock Exchange, which at the time were, all of them were probably, what, 10 times bigger than CBOE, right? Or 8 times? I mean,
oh, yeah.
I mean, not even close. So these are their competition. And oh, by the way, head of the CBOT. Now, these, of course, are all companies that are members that were given this, essentially, I use the term, monopoly power by the government, right? So we're talking about the heads of monopoly mm-hmm. places. So the, so this guy's making, you know, $2 million a year, and he's got, you know, this kind of a, retirement where he's going to make, you know, $500,000 a year when he's retired, and oh, by the way, he's in four country clubs, and your poor guy is only making like $1 million. He's only in two. And it, you know, you listen to this bull bleep, right? So the bottom line is, you know, if you guys don't give these guys, you know, a raise, and by the way, nobody can live when they don't have this job at $500,000 or $300,000 a year. It's got to be $500,000. And you're listening to this crap, and you're going, for God's sake. Well, one of the board. So now, of course, we listen to these guys, and the next meeting we got to vote. So one of the board members, will go nameless, brings in a sheet of paper from Cranes. And at the time, the CBOE's revenue for the place, I'm going to say was, I don't know, what would you say, Russell, $25 million, $200 million, something like that? Say 200. I think it was probably 200, because a lot of stuff that went down there, the place really just got the fees and the dues, right? So anyways, let's say 200 million.
Yeah.
So just for argument's sake. So Cranes comes in, and they have a list of all the people in Chicago that of companies that, you know, here's a billion-dollar company. There's like 10 of those and what the CEOs make. Then here's a $250 million company was their breakup. And here's like 10 of those and here's what the CEOs make. And every one of the CEOs in the $250 million company was in the $200,000 to $250 range. And our guys are like in the $950 because we didn't want to broach the million-dollar number for the members. And these guys are recommended they go to like two or a million and a half or some number. So he passes this around the table. Well, you couldn't have put a stink bomb off on a plane, and he nobody wanted any part of that. That we should actually pay these guys. They wanted to be paid like they were the head of the New York Stock Exchange, not like they were a $250 million firm in Chicago. And there was a massive difference between the two. Remember how much? It was a little ball-headed guy.
Oh, yeah.
How much did he make at the New York Stock Exchange? What was his name? He made
Grasso. He made nine figures.
Yeah, but he got didn't he make. Maddie, this was so spot. Didn't he make like 40 or 45% of the entire amount of compensation they paid everybody? They had like 1,000 employees, and he got like 45% of all the dough, didn't he?
I'm sure it is because it was such a high number.
I mean, wait a minute. This one guy makes more than like half of your other people combined. Who the hell is he? God or Solomon? I mean, which he was not. Anyway, so
he handpicked the board, and the board was CEOs of a bunch of other companies that were listed. I mean, he totally stacked the board in his favor.
Well, I guess where I'm heading with this is, what is the system we now have with this kind of system? Is this something that the shareholders? I mean, the shareholders are they even really in charge of the place? I never dreamed that on the Google the New York Stock Exchange would allow a company where most of the shareholders don't have a vote. We've even morphed past that. Why even make a joke like they have a vote? Some companies don't even have one. You don't have a vote in what's the Chinese Baidu, right? No, it's Baidu.
Yeah, there's used to be a lot more, but there's still a handful of companies that don't allow you. I mean, have two different classes of voting of shares, and basically the CEO owns all the voting shares. And the other side, it used to be a much bigger problem than it is now. And I believe one, if not both of the exchanges are going to change the listing rules where you because of the big focus on ESG and the governance as part of the ESG thing, people don't, they don't think of ESG as being a management type thing, but a third of it actually is. And, with a renewed focus on, or a upgraded focus on that, if you've got, you know, management is the only one that gets to vote shares, that's terrible governance. So those companies are getting bad ESG scores. But in addition to that, I do think the exchanges have strengthened the rules on who they allow to be listed, and shareholders have to have more of a say than they used to in the past.
Russell, review the ESG stuff for everybody. A little bit, you're over the top of people on that one. What is that exactly?
The SEC stuff?
You said ESG.
God. Oh, ESG. Oh, it's basically I think everybody sees the initial ESG and they automatically think that it's just a company make sure it's not an oil company that's polluting the earth. But it's a combination of how are they treating the environment, which you would expect. How do they do as being a corporate citizen, like the social part, which is, and I when I utter this, it's going to sound like I'm being a bad guy, but it's practically how woke are they at this point? Which I had in the back of my mind when I was talking about management being more concerned about public opinion than their shareholders. And then the governance part is an issue that we've been focusing on for years. And basically, at a very high level, the more independent your board is, the higher governance score you're going to get on the ESG. Also, the more diverse your board is, and there has been like a massive increase in the diversity of boards over the last six months, because companies realize that's another way to get their ESG score higher. But you've got to have a decent enough ESG score to qualify to be put in an ESG friendly portfolio, and assets are flowing into those things. ESG has outperformed the S&P 500 this year by about 1% or so. And for instance, the number of shares for ESG ETFs that are outstanding has increased by 25%, whereas the number of shares for that SPY ETF are actually down about 3% this year. The number of shares outstanding, because they issue and they retire shares based on market flows. So it's just a real indication that money's flowing into those areas. And if you're a manager whose primary focus is to increase shareholder value and do no harm, you've got to be more and more focused on the ESG score.
Well, I think you're right. I think when people make rules like that, and there are people obviously that do when everybody's got an opinion, you at least, somebody on the board should put up there what is the role of the outside board, or what is the role of the board? The board is essentially charged with what? Their job is to hire and fire the CEO, right? To a large extent.
The CEO works for the board, and then everybody else works for the CEO, basically.
And you're also supposed to have, you're supposed to make sure that the board, not, I guess being a good citizen is part of it, but that the, you have the best interests of the shareholders in the long term, in your sight. So, if you decide you're going to pay the guy on 90 day how well he did on expenses, that's when you find that the guy took all the dirty pollution and poured it in the river because he didn't have to pay to take it away, because it helped his bottom line for the. So if you focus on, we're going to be here for 50 years, and if we mess something up, we're going to have to pay to clean it up, which is probably going to cost us four times more than if we didn't mess it up in the first place. You almost become community people just by definition, even if it's just money driving you.
Yeah.
If you take a longer term view.
But the area that that really, that you can translate that into, you can translate it more quantitatively in the impact that it's going to have on investments, is the bonds that you put out there versus the stock. Because when you issue bonds, you need to maintain certain cash flow to make the coupon payments on your bonds, and some sort of natural disaster like that's going to, and I'm thinking of an oil spill by Exxon or BP, blowing up a platform out in the Gulf. Those sorts of things are going to ruin your cash flow, and you're going to have a difficult time making your bond payments, your bond coupon payments. So that's where you really, that's where the ESG has more of an impact than in the stock space.
But you might have,
but stocks are more short-term oriented.
But you might have an ESG score that wants the board to have more power, okay? But the SEC actually makes it very difficult for people to run on from the outside for the board. So the SEC works essentially against, in a lot of ways, what anybody would want them to do. But it also, this is going to sound awful, I'm out of my plank here politically correctly, the idea of having, a minority on the board, that's fine, depending on who the minority is. I mean, if you only have white people on the board, they're going to vote yes for every raise, and you find a black guy or a lady who's going to vote yes for every raise, you really haven't done much. Right? I mean,
right.
So at one time, this is, God, probably right we started the show, maybe more, that there was, when people were starting to put, looking at some kind of diversity, there was like a black couple. Between the husband and the wife, I think we're on like something like 40 boards.
They wow.
Were, they were 25 or there's some huge number. And the lady who was the head of the NYU, one of the colleges in New York, African-American lady, obviously very bright. Well, how the hell could she do that mm-hmm. job? She was on like 12 boards or 8 boards. You know, because she was you know, the African-American of choice. It was like putting Henry Kissinger on your board or something, okay? Even though he's 90 and he can't even walk. He's drooling on himself. You know, he's gonna vote yes from a distance. He's never gonna show up. He's never gonna cause a problem. So, I mean, can you find a black person to vote yes? Yeah. Have you helped anything? I don't know. I guess for that person you
maybe,
have.
Maybe not.
Well, for that person you have, because he or she's on the board and you or I aren't. Are we really trying to empower boards? I mean, ideally, the new board member should walk into the CEO and say, shake hands and say, hi, I'm your new boss. But that's not happening, right? And when you
no. I mean, even if you add a couple of board seats and you start bringing in outside board members, what can they really do?
Well,
you know, it's kind of like if I get elected to Congress, the next go round, how much can I really do as a new person, you know, with very, very little say?
Well, I could actually torpedo someday. Somebody's going to put you on a board long before me, and I'm gonna if you didn't bring coffee that week, I'm going to say I'm going to torpedo your ass. And how could I do that while being nice to you, Russell? They're going to call me for a reference.
No, I don't think I'm going to be on the board either.
Well, they're going to call me for a reference, and I'm going to say, "Oh, Russell. Oh, God, yeah, he's the best guy going." I guarantee you that if you put him on the board, he will not be afraid to ask the tough question. And he will never forget he works for shareholders. You will not get that assignment. Just saying.
Yeah.
And I just said something very nice
to him. I know you did. There's a liability that goes along with being on a board of a public company, and typically they've got some sort of insurance policy in case the board gets sued over something. I don't want to be responsible for something that I only have a couple of meetings a year on, and a lot of other people are, you know, influencing how things go.
I would say, Russell, we got to go to break.
I don't think boards have enough real actual power to implement change at a company or make sure that the company, you know, of a few thousand people is always doing the right thing.
I'm going to say that if something stunk,
I'm happy not to be on a board.
If something stunk, you'd smell it and you wouldn't let it get past you. Now, whether that means you're a short-term member or not, I don't know. But I have a feeling you're not going to sign the thing that says go buy the hitmen, hire the hitman, and then be pissed off they killed somebody, right? I don't think you'd be that way. You'd sense he was a hitman in the first place.
Honestly, I think, you know what the issue is I would, whenever I'm doing something, you know, whether it's teaching a class or writing a paper or whatever, I'm overly critical of myself, and I want to make sure there's like a perfection thing going on there. If I were on the board at, let's just say, my old employer, CBOE, I would spend an inordinate amount of time focused on that task. And when I broke down my per-hour compensation, it'd probably come to about $3.50.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's another reason I wouldn't want to do something like that.
What do you figure I got for the 10 years I was a chairman of a committee where you didn't get paid? What do you think? What do you think that
you
was
got a little extra badge to wear when you're on the floor. That's what you
got. Yeah, that was just swell. S&P futures up 475. NASDAQ futures up 15. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading
trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 350, NASDAQ futures up 575, Dow up 57, individual stocks in the Dow. I don't see anybody. Goldman Sachs up $1.30, and everybody else, I got Salesforce up $1.14. Other than that, not a hell of a lot moving to the upside, just nothing down. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 57.4%, FTSE up 30.4%. Kekaran down 29.4%. So I'm going to say a mixed bag over there, but not a whole lot. Nikkei down 9, call that flat. So they were way down and they were way up, and now they're actually a little down. They were down 4, up 3, and now they're pretty much unchanged. Shanghai up 8.2%. Hang Seng up 507, 1.8. Those guys were down most of the week. Mainland China was down more than everybody else. Now they're bouncing back. When I say mainland China, the stuff on the mainland, they're not really, they're Hong Kong, but anyway, they were down and now they're back up to where they're all kind of in the same spot, which is bizarre. Dow Jones up 68, this is yesterday, it was a way of review. S&P, however, up 21, NASDAQ up 111 to a new record. Bonds, 1.48 unchanged, the 10-year rate. The Bund, minus 0.18, again, that's unchanged. Japan, positive 0.05, they're unchanged. So not much going on in the bond market today. Oil up 85 cents now, 73.70. As well, just keep chugging along here. Brent up 87 cents, 75.68. Maddie, was it a month ago? We were worried about whether it was going to go through 70. Now it's 75.68. Natural gas up 3 cents, 3.29. RBOB now up 2 cents, 2.24. Gold is up 6.50 now, 17.83. But it needs like a $100 rally to get to where it was a week ago. Silver up 14 cents, 25.99. Copper up 4 cents, 4.27. Again, copper continues to be the best mover in this whole space because it's not down like the other guys are. It's managed to hang in there. Crypto, and this was the story yesterday, Bitcoin traded under 30,000 and came back and was up on the day a little bit. Now today it's 34,100. So interesting there. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty decent start here, I would say, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. That earlier crash on the tri-state right at the Stevenson exit there has been cleared. That was a nightmare earlier this morning. There's still some resulting congestion from that, but the accident itself is finally clear, so that's good news. But that's probably our slowest moving expressway right now. No issues on the Edens, traffic building on the Kennedy. Eisenhower, some heavy traffic volumes as well, but no accidents to report. Stevenson looks okay until you approach the circle. Then you'll run into some delays at that construction area. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning, so that's good news. Off the expressways, there's a crash out in Wheaton, North Avenue at County Farm Road. And then on the south side, there's some police activity that has one lane blocked on the south side of Wentworth and 38th Street. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds in the area, a chance of showers, a high of 77. Right now it's partly cloudy and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast down there too, with a high of 99 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 90. In sports, Cubs blew out the Indians last night at Wrigley, 7-1. Kyle Hendricks with his 10th win on the season. White Sox were doubled up in Pittsburgh, losing to the Pirates 6-3. Sox have dropped 5 in a row, but still have a 2-game lead in the AL Central over Cleveland. Diamondbacks were shut out by the Brewers, who are tied with the Cubs atop the NL Central. Neither team can separate from each other in the NL Central. Brewers beat the Diamondbacks 5-0. NBA basketball, the Bulls drew the 8th pick in the lottery last night, but that goes over to Orlando as part of the Vucevic trade. So the Bulls do not have a first-round 21 pick as it stands right now. They'll draft 38th overall in the second round.
If they would have lost it, would it have gone to, or they would have retained it, then they would have got next year's?
Exactly. Yep. If it was, it's a top four protected, so if they would have drawn in the top four, they would have gotten to keep it, and Orlando would get next year's. Pistons drew the number one overall pick, so they'll draft number one. Suns are number 29, and they're also in the Western Conference Finals and now up 2-0 as they beat Clippers in exciting fashion, 104-103 last night. DeAndre Ayton with an alley-oop dunk inside of 1 second to take a one-point lead. And so the Suns now lead 2-0 even without Chris Paul. Chief?
Is there a consensus number one pick?
Yeah, most people say Cade Cunningham, the forward out of Oklahoma State, who Russell might know a little bit about because he follows Oklahoma State.
Well, how old is he?
Yeah, I'm still a student at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, he's a freshman, so he's finished his freshman year, so he's either 19 or almost 20, something like that.
Russell, when are you going to? You've been almost a PhD for 8 years, for God's sake. When are you going to?
No, that's not true. I got about 5 weeks left.
All right.
Oh, nice.
Good for you.
I'm very close to done.
By the way,
part of the deal at going to teach in Indiana starting in the fall is finish that thing. So I got to finish that thing.
Now you got a deadline, yeah.
Well, normally invitations go out 6 weeks in advance. I have not gotten mine for the big party.
Well, the funny thing is even when I finished at the end of July, I don't get to walk in commencement until December. It's just the rules of finishing up your PhD, and I'm not going because my daughter has a dance recital that same day.
So
the fourth time, I will get a degree from a university and not actually go to the. I've never been to one of my own graduations.
That's hilarious.
Well, I assume you went to the high school one.
I never have. I got a degree from IIT, 2 degrees. From Memphis and Oklahoma State, I'll be 0-4, actually. I've actually, believe it or not, I have actually never been to a college graduation in my life.
Don't the professors always put on all the different...
I never went through the trouble of going up to Loyola's, and I actually had full intent on going last year, and then COVID kicked in.
I thought guys like to do that, like in the Army, because they get to show all their honorary degrees. They're all wearing all these different scarves. What do they call those things you put over your shoulder to show you got another degree? What is the name of that thing?
I don't know. No, the way it'll work for me is basically I'll have a really cool, funny looking hat. That's a little bit different than everybody else's. Once I have my PhD, I can also get there's a guy at Loyola. I think he was the head of the business school until recently. He went to Kentucky, and he looks like his robe looks like he plays basketball for Kentucky.
God. Well, I always saw that.
I'll get something kind of orange like.
Well, you can tell the pecking order of the guys how many PhDs and stuff people have and degrees. I mean, they got all kinds of stuff they're wearing around their neck and shoulders and stuff.
I'm seeing that they're called graduation stoles and cords.
Okay.
Ah.
Which I didn't know that.
So
you got to earn it.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. For the longest time, there was this rumor that I was some sort of weird prodigy and never went to college. And it's because after a few too many cocktails, somebody asked me where I went to school. And I go, I didn't go to college. I just finished high school. and they thought I was serious when I was, like, running a hedge fund.
Well, careful. I mean, the Unabomber
had sort of... had to go out and correct that one.
The Unabomber had somewhat of a resume like that.
Went straight into the industry.
Well, good for you. Did you go to your high school when it
was? That would have been nice.
Did you go?
I did go to my high school graduation.
And you had the robe and the whole bit, and you got a big picture?
I had the purple robe. It was a De La Salle school. And that was that.
You weren't, like, naked under the robe.
Yeah, Maddie went over, you were naked under the robe.
No, they actually, there was a dress code that we had to adhere to. It was an all-boys school. And have you ever seen where people put together the little meme of like, all the, you know, they have, like, you know, a really preppy-looking guy, and he went to one high school, and then they have Bill Murray from Groundhog Day with the groundhog in the car, and they say, that guy went to that high school. That was my high school in Memphis.
Oh, God.
We were a force to be reckoned with, to say the least.
Hey, I have a question for you. This is since you are still professoring, because I remembered I remember this from the University of Chicago, and it had to do with investing kind of versus people's psychology, because we covered some of that stuff. And the thing that puts me on this is I got a thing here from Luckbox, and the question is, would you prefer a guaranteed payment of $10 or a 50% chance of winning $24 and a 50% chance of winning nothing? So basically, I use the math term.
We know the value of that.
Yeah, well, but I mean, so if you're an efficient markets person, you're going to take the 50% chance of winning the 24 because expected value is 12,
yeah.
Right? Okay. Now, my question is, and the one that we delved into for quite a while at the University of Chicago, where I'm going with this is I'm looking at people who are, it's considered to be all young people that are trading these stocks that are, you know, flying all around, high volatility, the meme stocks, whatever you want to call them. Now, my question to you is, where do you stand? I mean, the research being done by one of the professors there was, most people would think that your risk-reward curve is essentially close to even. In other words, if you had a guaranteed payment of $10 or a 50% chance of $20 or zero, the expected value is zero. So if you gave a survey, you'd probably get half people on one side and half on the other, because people are somewhat, the thought was people are somewhat efficient and or neutral on their outcomes. But now this person was actually trying to prove that people's risk reward curve, based on their lot in life, is actually skewed a little bit to the right. What that means is, is that if you had a $20 and you had a 99% chance of losing your $20, but a 1% chance of winning like $1,000, or, well, 1% would be 20 divided by, the 1% would be, what, 2,000, right?
2,000.
So if you had a 1% chance of winning 1,900, that a lot more people would take that bet than you would guess based on the efficient markets, because you'd say, why would I do that? I'm not getting, if it was 2,000, I'd be even, but 1,900, I'm not. And what the person was trying to prove is that people psychologically, that's why people bet on lotteries, that's why people do stuff. Anything that would change your lot in life, pay off all your bills, blah, blah,
exactly,
blah, that you would actually take, I'll use the term, a crappy numbers deal to do that. First of all, I want to know whether you think that that's true, and if it is that part of people buying a stock where they don't care if it ever has any income, or they care, but really the chance that it could double by next week is what is the hook. And even though they don't care what the stock does, they don't care if they make money, they don't care what they do. Essentially a lot of what we see is buried psychologically, not only in people, but in the economics that we see now, where it's really hard for somebody in the lower middle class to break out. Is this like a way for them it's why when you go in and see the lottery tickets, you'll see a guy who is, you know, bumming money at night, buying lottery tickets. He's looking to break out of his life. Take over here. Were these guys right, you think, or is it?
Well, I think it's two different behavioral traits that you're mixing up there a little bit. on the $10 versus the $24 thing, I automatically think, well, in this day and age right now, where you know, the $12 or the $24 is not going to change my life, I'd probably just say, yeah, let's go flip the coin and see what happens. Me in college, where I'm working a couple of jobs and, you know, barely making my car payment, my tuition payments and everything else, I'm taking whatever anybody hands me, you know. Now, when you switch over to the, you know, $2,000 versus $20 or $1,900 versus $20, because as you said, that's a life-changing thing. That starts to skew your behavior, and that's shown in different types of curves. That's part of my dissertation in a roundabout way.
Really?
It's a behavioral finance thing. But on the other side of it, the buying the meme stocks in those types of things right now, I think that is something that hasn't really been academically defined, but it's something, it's what we call the fear of missing out. And when you see other people that look just like yourself, or, you know, have the exact same job as you, which is, and you're not in the financial industry, glomming onto some stock that they read about on a chat board and, you know, making enough money to buy themselves a new car or something like that. You see something like that happen, you have this fear of missing out or envy or whatever that makes you act in an irrational way. So the irrationality in the two different situations, I think, stems from a different source.
Okay, it's, for me to confuse something is not unusual. Like, I remember reading.
No. Yeah. Just you were talking about two different. Both of them are all rooted in prospect theory, where humans don't do the mathematically correct thing all the time. Sometimes because of their personal circumstances, but the initial prospect theory stuff goes right along with what you were saying, which is that depending on your lot in life and how much net worth you have, you know, an extra $2,000 is very different to me than, you know, maybe my sister who works in a bakery down in Memphis,
right,
and barely finished high school.
Well, if you owe so $2,000 on your car,
they're all rooted in the same thing.
If you owe $2,000 on your car and you can get rid of your car payment, it's a big deal. If you're going to go out and buy a car so it's expensive that the tax is $2,000, you're probably not worrying about it.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting.
It's funny you mentioned that, because when I was in graduate school, they had just opened casinos in Memphis, or just outside of Memphis. And a girl I was dating at the time loved to go play craps, and she had some bucks. And we went down there, and just for the heck of it, the first thing I did, I won like $260 on a slot machine immediately, and that actually was a car payment.
Wow.
Nice.
I you know what I did? I sat at the bar and let her go play, and I didn't do another thing.
Oh, God, you remind me of Audrey.
That was the end of my night. I was like, you know what? Because at that time, that was a life-changing event. Like, God almighty. I don't have to worry about this month's car payment.
That is. There's. I can't remember where I heard it, but there was a... well, you just mentioned about the fear of missing out. Either... I have this book... Crash at 29 that I've read a couple times. Fascinating book. Then there's another one. Who was the... Ken Burns did a thing on the crash, too, didn't he? I think he did.
Yeah. And that's what was going on. People were running to storefront. I mean, you know, the places in New York that you pick up your newspaper when you get off the subway back in the day, you could buy stocks at those places.
Well, one of the interesting parts was all these guys that... wrote all this basically crap from 29. It had to be from New York, because if you look at any of the statistics of the general population's participation in the market, it was like less than 7% of the population. It was a really low number.
Yeah,
I mean in New York, I mean if the shoeshine boy, you know, was in the market, he was an unusual New York subway shoeshine boy. he wasn't a guy from Omaha. I mean, it was happened to be shining shoes, right? So. But the interesting part, where you mentioned fear of missing out, there was a letter either from Ken Burns or in his book where some guy writes to his dad, who, you know, was slugging away in a factory and making whatever he made back then per hour, He says, "Dad, I hate to see, and Dad, I basically hate to see you work so hard. You go to work and you come home and you're tired and you're sore and you're 50 years old and blah blah blah. Where anybody puts their money in the market is making more than you do any week, and all you got to do is put your money in there. And why are you working so hard when this is so easy? I mean, and you know, it absolutely encapsulated everything you said. You know, the idea that other people are making dough and they're sitting on the sofa having a beer, and I'm working and I'm not doing as well as they do. It's
exactly
it is, and it's also the stuff that, you know, what did Bogart say? It's the stuff dreams are made of. You know, and I don't know. I'm having so much trouble right now putting all this stuff together, Russell. And I mean, it's when, because I last week, I mean, when I was mentioned earlier, when I started on the floor, people thought that nobody felt they could control the market, and if the government or anybody spent 3 or 4 days, you know, manipulating currencies, that the fifth day they'd figure out all we're doing is losing money and they'd stop. I've never seen anything like this coordinated, where last week the Fed came out and was, you know, basically giving everybody a hunk of crap on this inflation and stuff. And in order to back up their words, where they had bonds go up in a week where they announced they finally admitted the inflation, they put $102 billion into the system. I mean, are we going to allow these people for that long to do that? I mean, we're talking about now, you know, 8 months, we were $1 trillion into the system. I mean, they're printing up. I mean,
what can be done to stop them? They're kind of an independent agency.
Well, I mean,
they answer to, I mean, I guess Congress could cut their funding.
But nobody.
I'm not really sure.
But I can't. You know, but somewhere along the line, I can't. If you are going to, I can't even think of an example. If you're going to be in the Metropolitan Sanitary District, and you keep, you know, cutting back on the amount of money you spend for people's sewage stuff, and all of a sudden there's a huge rain, and everybody in the city has a basement full of sewer water, you get to do some stuff to cover your ass, and at the end of the day, everybody else pays for it. This is the things that revolutions are made of. I guess what I'm saying, Russell. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's way off the chart. I mean, it's not even. But Congress has to say, what are these guys doing? This was never envisioned in anybody's charter. Although Congress is spending money, they love the fact that the $3 trillion they spent, they didn't have to tax to go get, right? The Fed just came up with it.
Oh yeah.
So it's not like they're not part of it. But I just wonder where is the adult in the room that's going to say, when you get to $8.5 trillion, stop, or 9 or 10 or 20 or someplace. I mean, it has to be. It can't just be us that are looking at it.
I don't.
Go ahead.
And who do they really answer to?
Well,
they really answer to the large financial institutions. In the end of the day, they've got to go in front of Congress for like a show. I almost want to call it a show trial instead of a show testimony. But they have to show up, you know, a couple times a year and explain what's up. And basically, they do like a professor that would do that needs to make themselves feel smart, so they are just enough confusing to make their students think that things that they're doing are very difficult. They just sit there and speak above Congress's heads. You can see it.
It's easy to do, by the way.
I almost feel like when they're testifying, they're suppressing laughter at some of the questions that they're getting.
Well, I have this view.
But nothing can be done. I mean, other than getting yelled at by Congress, there's really nothing they can do.
But I have this view that's starting to get really, really, really sinister, and we only have 2 minutes. So I'll keep it brief. We'll be able to talk about it more next week. Or maybe Maddie will shoot me for talking about it at all. I have this sinister view that World War II, if Maddie and I had a PT boat manufacturer and we're making the engines for them, we might find a way, because everybody does and they deal with the government, not that it's right, to somehow screw the government and the other people, you know, 5 or 10% for the engines. Because Manny and I plan on living the rest of our life here, and I don't have kids, but someday he probably will. We have kids, we got grandkids. We don't want to screw the place so much, a little bit maybe, but not so much that we're, you know, it becomes a disaster. But we were just a bunch of chumps that lived in the U.S., but now the people that are making these calls are these international firms. And I don't really know if Jeff Bezos gives a rat's behind whether he lives in this country or whether he lives in Monaco. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the man.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it's the extent of the stealing and the favoritism is at a number to where you wonder if these people are even here. That if they cause a revolution, they don't care. They're gone on the private rent. They're living in Ireland or someplace. Not that the Irish are bad.
I mean, living on an island they bought in the Caribbean.
It seems different because there doesn't seem to be an adult in the room. And I don't know. I wish I could write the stuff like you could in a PhD, because there's a paper here somewhere to be written. I mean, who's controlling stuff? What are their motivations compared to people who stole 80 years ago? Were the motivations of the stealers different? I think they are, and I think we're seeing it. I can't get my hands around it. I mean, maybe you can help. But I'm just saying, next week.
We're going to solve all the problems in the world next week.
Well, we got an hour. We can handle it. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 12. Be back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.